revised?
Yes.
Yep. Anything else? Oh, one more. Make something up. Yes, Mr. Bass.
Would it be possible to have those doors closed? Because I can hear it's really distracting me.
I know. Probably a base pump or something.
It's hideous for them.
The piece has it understanding. Okay. You will recall my observing last time in the preliminary discussion of the 19th century and values associated with Romantic style that two new genres of art music emerge into prominence as vehicles for this expression of romantic aesthetic value. One of which is the art song. And I want to continue to discuss the art song today with particular attention, as you can see, no secret from you, Robert Schumann and his so-called. And before I do so, and before talking about the song cycle, and of course a song cycle, once again, your notes from last time should include this reference, I hope. A series, a collection of songs, a sequence of songs, intended to tell a story, to describe a succession of actions combined with reflections upon those actions. Mark Evans Bonds discusses song, as he puts it quite simply, in chapter 16 of his text. And again, as always, whether or not you have the text with you, and it wouldn't surprise you if you're not, it's a waste of time, please make note of the page references for close reading later on. His discussion of song is the second of four topics into which chapter 16 is divided, as a point of information. And of particular interest and importance to your understanding of art song is his discussion on page 432 of the rise of domestic music making. You'll recall that he laid out this notion of the domestic and the public in his discussion of 18th century style. The domestic at that point, including the genres of the sonata class, the string quartet, and the keyboard sonata, among many others that I've also discussed. Art song is a 19th century addition to the domestic music making. And as he notes, the repertories that were created were repertories intended for amateur performers. Amateur performers playing for small groups of people, family members primarily, in the home. Thus, the German term for such music, Hausmusik. The art song and the character piece for piano, which I will discuss in the near future, were the two principal genres of music in the Romantic style that contributed to, in fact, perhaps defined more than any other, the concept of house music. And again, I want to stress that the term house music has its American equivalent. The term, this term would be a somewhat antiquated American term, parlor music. Parlor is a 19th century term. The parlor was the place where the family gathered and the family entertained visitors. The 20th century term for parlor is living room. But I'm sure you will agree that there's a certain amount of cachet to the phrase parlor music that is lost with its 21st century equivalent, living room music. I mean, that's not, it doesn't happen to see, does it? Living room music, no. And the living room was not a term known in 19th century American vocabulary, either. Yes?
When I think of parlor music, I keep getting the image of back in the West when they used to play in bars and someone would be singing.
That was bar music, not parlor music.
But it's not the same. It's got specifically called bar music?
No.
Okay.
The trouble with the image that you have is that it's a Hollywood conception. The idea of an upright piano in a bar and somebody playing it goes back to the 19th century without doubt. The repertory is no gospel much the same. But Stephen Collins Foster would hardly have thought of himself as composing for such a low-life environment as a bar. After all, he was middle-class Pittsburgh native. Parlor was a place of elegance, family elegance. Now, it has to be stressed that the word amateur also has very different implications than those you might anticipate given its 21st century meanings or associations with music. Today, the term amateur obviously suggests, though it is not always true, that the performer is somehow mediocre, of lesser stature, of more limited training, of perhaps more limited vision of musical expression and artistry. Someone who plays the notes but does not create music. Someone whose sense of rhythm or pitch or harmony is somehow weak, whose technique is limited. This is not true in the 19th century. Amateurs were such as much because of their gender as because of their training. Amateur music makers were predominantly the women of the middle class. As I said before, women whose social customs constrained the notion of a professional career, and thus made for many the notion of the training to prepare for a professional career absolutely beside the point and inconceivable. Nonetheless, women performers compelled to maintain an amateur status were not in any real sense necessarily limited in their virtuosity, in their technique, in their artistry, in their musicianship. There is no connection in the 19th century, necessary connection, between the term amateur and the limitations that we anticipate associated with the term today. And if you need evidence of that, as you listen to Fanny Mendelssohn's character pieces, I'm listening to Assignment Number 5, as I believe I say in the commentary associated with those, the music that you hear, incidentally performed by a woman in the late 20th century, is music that Fanny Mendelssohn herself first performed. And the virtuosity required for those two little character pieces not only tell us of her vision of composing, at the same time, it tells us a great deal about her proficiency as a pianist. She played that music first before a critical and sophisticated audience in Berlin. Bonds argues for the close connections between amateur music and house music, the art song, and reminds us of the dichotomy that Beethoven established in his late period between the monumental and the miniature in what I regard as a very instructive paragraph that is the fifth paragraph of page 432. Quote, performed by only two musicians in a room of modest size before a select audience. Once again, performed by only two musicians a select audience. The song is a genre in which the slightest inflection of harmony, dynamics, and register can have great effect. In contrast to a monumental genre of heightened symphony, the song calls for heightened sensitivity from composers, performers, and listeners. Its popularity reflects a belief that simplicity can be profound, that a universe of emotions can be encapsulated within a work of small dimensions. Now we're going to examine that part of the universe of emotions that the first three songs of Ishvadeva reveal to us. But you've already encountered a song with a wide variety of emotions, emotions that are not even themselves static, but evolve, and that is, of course, their origination. With the evolving emotions of the father, the son, and the demon, with the nuances of accompaniment and key, providing a framework for the expression of those evolving emotions in the course of the text. A work of maybe 3-4 minutes narration or 2 performers. Well, I call this too big. That small space is smaller than this. Just to give you a sense of the size of the performance space for which many art songs were intended and first performed by Schubert, by Kinsel, by Schumann's, both of them. So let's consider Robert Schumann and his Ishvadeva. Love's poet's love. Schumann's earliest piano activity, let me observe, he was born in 1810, so we're talking about what he was doing in the 1830s, or during his 20s. His earliest musical activity centered principally on the works for solo piano. One, he was a pianist himself, and wrote music for his own performances. Two, music for solo piano was where the money was, because the solo piano was to be found in the parlor. Today we associate Schumann's solo piano music with the concert stage. That's today. That was not in his day. In his day, it was for the private family gathering, or private family gathering with friends. The French might call it a soirée musicale, a musical evening. He published 23 opera of keyboard music. Opera spelled O-P-E-R-A, which looks suspiciously like opera. But in this pronunciation, which sounds pretentious because it is, I have given you the Latin plural of the word opus. Opus's plural is opera, not opuses. So you know. You're killing the next Trivial Pursuit game. I know. It's all the same. 23 publications, 23 opera of solo keyboard music, collections of character pieces, sonatas, as well. And this carried him from 1830 to 1850. So this is, obviously, you can do the math, on average 2.3 publications a year. And then he abruptly shifted to song. He abruptly shifted to song when it seemed quite possible that he would prevail and his beloved Clara Wieck would prevail over her father in a court case. Why should they have to sue her father? Because among all the other social constraints of middle class Central Europe, were laws that said that a woman could not marry without her father's consent. Today, of course, we honor that as a custom. At some point, having gotten the woman's consent, the guy summons up his courage to ask her father or parents. Any reason to object to his marrying their daughter. that is, of course, a subject of all sorts of dramas, whether serious or comic. But what is today a custom was, in fact, at one time, law. The reason they went forward was because they waited to the far of 821, at which point the father no longer had legal authority, even though he still insisted that she not marry him. In the course of the period from 1840 to 1841, Schumann composed three song cycles, as well as a whole bunch of individual songs. And thus, among scholars of this period of Schumann's life, or Schumann's biography in general, especially those who were German, this period of time, 1840-41, is referred to as the Liederjahr. Obviously, Lieder songs, or of song, year. The year of song.
Is that a wide idea?
That is a great. This is German.
I'm not there very well.
How do you do? Contributing to your original picture. Now, you don't know the reason for the abrupt change. Why he stopped just focusing on keyboard. After all, Clara was a virtuosa. But one major reason appears to be a wish for a more definite expression of ideas through the use of poetry, the poetry set to music in Lieder. This may be the most likely reason, simply because it reflects his own thinking as he wrote about that thinking at the end of the 1830s. Recall again, he was the founder of a music journal and wrote much of the criticism on its pages in the early years of its history. And among his essays was a review of a recent publication of songs, 12 songs, by a composer today regarded as a minor figure, a Kleinmeister, to use the German, a small master, about this high. a composer named Robert Franz, or that's worth. And he concluded the remark with a remark, which in reality, the lead is perhaps the only type of music in which meaningful progress has been made since Beethoven, unquote. Note the implication. Symphonies have not improved since Beethoven. Quartets have not gotten any better. Sonatas have not improved. Beethoven said it all, except in the area of the art song, perhaps, about which Beethoven made significant, but comparatively speaking, minor contributions compared to the symphonies and quartets. When he wrote this in 1840, Beethoven had only been dead for 13 years, during which time, in Schumann's opinion, Central European music had basically stagnated in terms of evolution of major genres, except for the other. So, of the work done during the Liederjahr of 1840-41, we will consider the first three songs of Schumann's Opus 48, Dichte Liebe, Poet's Love. The poet who composed the setting was one of those major figures to whom I referred in an introductory lecture a couple of meetings ago. Heinrich. Pronounced, but it is a vowel in Heinrich. Schumann's level of creativity in this BWM. Consider the compositional history of this song cycle. History. We know that on May the 24th, 1840, he began setting the 20 poems that Heine had published under the heading, under the title, Dichter Lieber. It starts out as a set of 20 poems, published as a small book. He completed the setting of the 20 poems on May 31st, 1840. In other words, in 7 days, he set all 20 texts to music. By the time the music was published in 1844, he blocked 4 of the settings. Thus, Dichter Lieber as a song cycle consists of 16 songs. Dichter Lieber is a book of poems consisting of 20 poems. Mm-hmm. Is that clear? Begin by considering the score of the first song we did. It's always the exercise of focusing. All right, we make that focus. Is that all right? Song is short. You can see that it sets two stanzas. Two stanzas typical of the opening song or the opening stanzas of a poem, opening stanzas of a cycle, set the stage. In wunderschönen Monat Mai, aus aller Knospen springen. Da ist in meinem Herzen die Liebe aufgegangen. Im wunderschönen Monat Mai aus allen Vogeln singen. Da habe ich ihr gestanden, mein Sehnen und Verlangen. In the lovely month of May, when all the buds are bursting, then within my heart love broke forth. In the lovely month of May, when all the birds were singing, then I confessed to her my longing and desire. Let's listen to this and take note of how this particular song conveys, as Bonds had said, our song did. The slightest inflections of harmony, dynamics, and register to great effect. Thank you. How would you describe the effect of this song, the emotion of this song?
It's very sad and somber.
Sad and somber. What contributes to your sense of this, that effect? And what about the tonality? The B? Where does it end harmonically?
It doesn't end on one.
It doesn't end on one. So what's the impact of that upon our sense of the music? Mr. Williams?
It's just very uncertain.
Uncertain? Why should it be uncertain? I think that's a very good characterization. Perhaps uncertainty more than sadness, unless you associate uncertainty with sadness. But why is it this way?
Well, he is talking about what he's going to do.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't really resolve.
Exactly. What he's going to do. Is he confident of the outcome here?
No,
he's not confident. All he knows is he loves this girl and he's going to tell her. But, I mean, how many guys have summoned up the courage to do that, only to have, starting the second part, say, you must be out of your mind. Yes, he is tentative. Mr. Wildman, what is the harmony that ends? Can you see it in enough detail? I can bring it up. Can you see where we end harmonically? It's obviously not on time. Can you see? I can enlarge it.
I think it sounded like dominant.
Ending on the dominant. So what kind of cadence is it that ends on the dominant? I'm sorry?
Half.
Half cadence. Yeah. Isn't that curious? Composition ending on a half cadence. Yeah. What key are we? Mr. Weller, can you see?
In E?
Are we in E? If we are in E, and we end on a half cadence, what would the half cadence have to consist of? I don't think we are. There are only three sharps, right?
Does E have four sharps?
Or am I wrong? What are the pitches of the final chord? As our pitch is there, that's what you see.
E sharp, E and A.
C sharp, is it E? E sharp, right? C sharp, E sharp, and B, and the B sharp part. C sharp, E sharp, G sharp. Can everybody see that? I don't think you can.
No.
There's the miracles of modern technology. Is that, if that's a dominant, what's got to be the time?
F-sharp.
F-sharp minor. And F-sharp minor is the relative minor of?
A.
A major. Do three sharps beget A major?
Yes.
Always bear in mind the parent figure was on the sharp side. The last of the sharps is the leading tone of the time, right? Always. It's easy to remember. F-sharp minor. Okay. Minor is always a good key for uncertainty, for doubt, or possibly sadness. Because I think the tempo is in lock. All right. Well, something better happen here, presumably. Here we are in the first song, harmonically. consider the second scene? Short, two, again, even shorter. Only two stanzas. Again, aus meinen Tränen sprießen die blühenden Blumen hervor, und meine Größe werden ein Nachtigall empor. We don't have any nightingales in North America. They're a European bird, just so you know. Closest thing we have to nightingales, I think, are mourning doves, which are early morning. Early morning doves usually wake you up when you want to sleep. Und wenn du mich liebe, hast Kindchen, sich hier dir Blumen all, und vor deinem Fenster so klingen, dass Lied der Nachtigall. From my tears spring up many blooming flowers, and my sighs become a chorus of nightingales. This guy is really messed over by this young woman. And if you love me, child, I'll give you all the flowers, and before your window shall stand the song of the nightingale, which she may or may not find desirable, but that's another point. Not strophic as was the first. Really, any thoughts? Anybody have an idea? Anybody? This is the color.
It's like ADA.
You're going ADA what? No, no, it's there. In fact, look at the fermata, the fermata thing. You have two in the top, right?
Yeah.
Two here and here.
ADA.
Okay, A, A.
Yeah, that's good.
A, A. Then we have a third one. He doesn't put a from out of here, he just goes forward, doesn't he? Here. So it's almost A, A, B, isn't it?
The last phrase is very similar to the first phrase.
Ah. A, A, B, A prime. Variation. A, A, B, A prime. Notice we're talking about phrases now, aren't we? Not stanzas. He subdivided the stanzas into pairs of phrases. A, A, B, A prime. Like her. Go get that. Want to hear that again? A simple yes will do. Thank you. We're going to hear this again and segue into the third one. And when we do, you figure out what's going to happen. Something along the lines of, well, I like you too.
I think she likes them too.
Yeah. The evidence is compelling. We don't have a song in which she responds. We have, as the third song, his reaction to that response. And by its tempo, by its text, and by its cadence, there can be no doubt that his extremely nervous, tentative offer of love was accepted. Let's consider it. The final cadence. What is that final cadence in what key, Mr. Mengel? You see it? He's rubbing the back row always. Can you see it?
It's a D.
D. D major. Is it a strong cadence, an authentic cadence?
Yes.
Yes, it is. In D major. Pretty final. We began in what key? You recall, Mr. Wilson, what key did we begin?
A major key. The song is the previous song?
The previous song was A major, but we began this set of three songs in?
F sharp minor.
F sharp minor. 3-5-1. We want to show sort of a Schenkerian overview of this. This is an exploration of the triad of D major, right? First focusing on the medium pitch, F sharp, with a tonic for the first song, then going to the fifth scale degree of that triad, A major for the second, and then resolving to one, the root of D major in the third. The text itself, die Rose der Lilie, die Taube, die Sonne, dann ich eins aller liebe Sonne. Ich liebe sie nicht mehr, ich liebe allein die Feine. The little one, the dainty one, the pure one, the one, the eine. Sie selber alle lieber Born in Rose and Lillian Alphonse. She alone, the spring of all love, is Rose Lily, Dove, and Sun. Yeah, and that's a hallmark moment. And notice a very miniature emotional drama. A very diminutive emotional progression. Recall, on page 435, Bonds noted this cycle, Ishtariva, that it was one of many cycles, quote, more loosely structured in terms of text. Remember, he skipped the poem about what she said back to him, loosely structured. But carefully organized in terms of tonality and other musical parameters. It was carefully organized in terms of tonality, carefully organized in terms of form, carefully organized to create a dramatic curve in its harmonic motion, reflecting the dramatic curve of the poem. As Bonds on page 435, as